Hey everyone, this is Tim Harris. I'm the pastor of Woodburn Baptist Church, and this is our weekly podcast. Hope it encourages you. Hope it makes you want to be closer to Jesus and more like Him. Hope you enjoy this sermon. And if you want to know more about us, find us online at woodburnbaptist.org.
Good morning. I thought that was going to sing just a little bit longer, but that's all right. Are y'all good? It's Christmas Eve. The only thing I wanted for Christmas was an early spring, and I think I got it. Y'all, I think I got it. So it's a Christmas miracle. Open your Bibles, if you will, to the second chapter of Luke. And if you will, grab a hymnal and turn to hymn number 118. I'm in a message series entitled Carols. And I want us today to look at the Christmas story from Luke chapter 2 and consider the carol by a man named William Dix called What Child Is This? I don't know if I have a favorite carol, but I really, really like What Child Is This? I really do. From early age, I just have loved the tune. I think the tune is particularly beautiful, kind of sweet and sad at the same time, you know? And something about What Child Is This? It really captures my heart. I walked in the room, you're singing, Oh, How I Love Jesus. Do you love Him? Really? Were you singing it because the words were on the screen and you were being asked to sing it? Do you love Him? It sounds almost childish to say it, doesn't it? You know, that I love Jesus. It sounds like something a child would say. When you're a child, you sing songs like, Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so little ones to Him belong. And somehow, after you're not a little one anymore, it seems childish to still love Jesus. I want you to fall in love with Jesus again this morning, if possible. Luke chapter 2, perhaps if you remember what He has done for you. Luke chapter 2, I want to read the Christmas story. If this were Charlie Brown Christmas, I'd be Linus right now. This is Linus's part. This is the story as it occurs in Luke chapter 2. I'm going to read all the way through verse 20. I know the passage is familiar, but will you just listen like it's brand new? Luke chapter 2, verse 1. At that time, the Roman Emperor Augustus decreed that a census should be taken throughout the Roman Empire. This was the first census taken when Quirinius was governor of Syria. All returned to their own ancestral towns to register for the census, and because Joseph was a descendant of King David, he had to go to Bethlehem in Judea, David's ancient home. He traveled there from the village of Nazareth in Galilee, and he took with him Mary, to whom he was engaged, who was now expecting a child. And while they were there, the time came for her baby to be born. Mary gave birth to her firstborn son. She wrapped him snugly in strips of cloth and laid him in a manger because there was no lodging available for them. That night, there were shepherds staying in the fields nearby, guarding their flocks of sheep. Suddenly, an angel of the Lord appeared among them, and the radiance of the Lord's glory surrounded them, and they were terrified. But the angel reassured them, "Don't be afraid," he said. "I bring you good news that will bring great joy to all the people. The Savior, yes, the Messiah, the Lord, has been born today in Bethlehem, the city of David. And you will recognize Him by this sign. You will find a baby wrapped snugly in strips of cloth, lying in a manger." Suddenly, the angel was joined by a vast host of others, the armies of heaven, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in highest heaven, and peace on earth to those with whom God is pleased." When the angels had returned to heaven, the shepherds said to each other, "Let's go to Bethlehem. Let's see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has told us about." So they hurried to the village and found Mary and Joseph, and there was the baby lying in the manger. After seeing him, the shepherds told everyone what had happened and what the angel had said to them about this child. All who heard this shepherd's story were astonished, but Mary kept all these things in her heart and thought about them often. Shepherds went back to their flocks, glorifying and praising God for all they had heard and seen. It was just as the angel had told them. I don't remember the year, like 2007, something like that. Queen Elizabeth II visited Kentucky. Y'all remember? Did she come to any of your house? Apparently she loved Kentucky, or she said she loved Kentucky. She probably said that everywhere she went. She's the queen. It was her last trip to the United States and truly her last trip to Kentucky. At the time, the press, the Courier Journal, a lot of the Kentucky journalists, they made a big deal about all it took to move that woman around the world. She traveled royally, you should say, something like 4,000 pounds of just luggage, like 4,000 pounds, y'all. She had two outfits for every single occasion. And then she carried multiple funeral dresses just in case somebody died, which is weird. This woman traveled with 40 pints of plasma, like her own blood, 40 pints of plasma, I guess in case, she bled. 40 pints of plasma, like this is every trip. She also traveled with multiple kid leather, I think it's like lambskin leather, like very soft white leather, toilet seats. Like apparently her imperial behind could not sit on anything but the best white leather. So she had, somebody would put a, every time she, which is, great. She went to Churchill Downs, which you should do in Kentucky. She went to Churchill Downs. They always said that Queen Elizabeth II loved horses, and so she went to the Downs, and Chef Gil Logan, was that his name? Chef Gil Logan wanted to prepare for her an amazing spread of Kentucky delicacies, Kentucky food. Now, when I say Kentucky food, delicacies, what comes to your mind? Poached lobster. Chef Gil Logan made barbecue shrimp, poached lobster, braised duck, all those things that we get at Cracker Barrel, And he made her a country cassoulet. I don't know what that is. I've been country all my life. I've been Kentucky all my life. I don't know what a cassoulet is. Unless that is some sort of French word for fried bologna. She is not eating Kentucky deli. You know what I'm saying? Like that ain't Kentucky, But she's the queen, right? And I guess they're not just going to feed her by any sausages and saltines. So I get it. I do get it. We understand she's the queen, and it takes a lot, to move her around, and you should have royal accommodations every place that she goes, and that's why she traveled with her own beautician and her own valet and an entourage of people who took care of her every need. She's royalty. I get it. I get it. And that's why we're all so interested, because she's different from us. She comes from a place far across the ocean. And for that reason, we all just sort of play along with the fact that she deserves all this. She's a queen. However, the whole Christmas story turns on this irony that the King of all kings, which means not just another king like any other earthly king, but the King above all kings, which means like the grand king, like higher than any other, a name so holy, so majestic that there's no other name that could possibly come close. I mean, no one else with this kind of glory, no one else with his majesty, no one else with a name like his. I'm talking about the birth of the Son of God. But the irony of it is the way he comes to us. I mean, just compare Queen Elizabeth with her country castellet and her, you know, kid leather white toilet seat covers, and compare that to the King of Kings, the Son of God, God in the flesh, who is born and laid in the straw. God in the straw. I don't know how to make sense out of that. That irony, that incongruity, it's impossible to reconcile in your head. You're never going to wrap your head around that. How was he born like this? Why? I mean, tons of questions come to mind, and that's sort of where the carol, "What Child Is This?" comes from. William Dix writes this carol in the middle of the 1800s, and if you've ever sang it or paid attention to it when you sang it, the verses are questions, because like I said, a whole lot of questions come to mind. What child is this? Who is this child? Laid there asleep in Mary's lap. Who is this child? I mean, that's question number one. That's verse number one. And the answer comes in the chorus. This is Christ the King, you know, whom angels, whom shepherds, y'all are looking at the hymnal. What's it say, y'all? Whom shepherds and angels sing. Yeah. Haste to bring him, Lord, the babe, the son of Mary. Yeah. So the verse asks the question, the chorus gives the answer. This is the way the whole carol goes back and forth. Why lies he here in such mean estate? I know, we don't talk like that. That's old English. But we would say, you know, why is he lying there in the straw? If this is the king, you know, if this is the child of Mary, if this is some royal babe, then why is he lying here in such ordinary, in such humble, in such substandard circumstances? He's lying in a feeding trough with the animals there. The ox and the ass are feeding. I mean, that's the question that William Dix is asking. Why? If that's who the child is, why? And how? And how do you explain? Laying in a manger, wrapped in strips of rags. You're never really going to understand the mystery of Jesus. This is the message of the carol. It's the truth of the gospel. You're never going to wrap your head around any of this, so it's best that you just get right on with the business of wrapping your heart around him instead and worshiping him. The Christmas story, in every telling, it always ends in worship. Somehow you get to the manger, and you're never going to understand how the Son of God could leave heaven and be born like this, but sooner or later, you just stop trying to understand it, and you just worship him. Amen. Now, the story, as Luke tells it, he just begins. The old King James says, and it came to pass that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus. You probably, some of you remember that language, and it came to pass. What Luke just says there is it happened. This is how it happened. It happened. Y'all know stuff just happens, right? All the time, stuff is happening. Weird stuff, unexplainable stuff. It just happens. That's the world. And you just tell the story and say, well, this is what happened, you know, And the story of Jesus is like that. There are just ordinary things that happen. I mean, some of them are weird things, but it's the kind of stuff that happens. I mean, the first thing we're told is that the government is monkeying up in everybody's life, messing up their Christmas. I mean, that's what it says. They're going to make you pay taxes like you're not already paying enough taxes, but this time you got to travel first. Like, that isn't going to be a lot of, you know, trouble. You got to travel to the place where your grandparents came from. So some of you going back up to Monroe County, you know, just to sign your tax paper so you can have the pleasure of giving the government more money. I mean, this is how the story goes, and none of that sounds weird at all, does it? I mean, that's just what happens. The government's going to monkey up our lives. That's how it happened. It just happens, and then you travel Because sometimes you just got to up and go. And Joseph and Mary up and go. And this is the worst possible time to up and go because Mary's pregnant, like big pregnant. Like she's about to go, you know? And that's how it always happens. It's the least convenient time to have to make this trip. But then they're making this trip anyway. That's how it happened. They're engaged. You know the story. She goes into labor. I mean, her water breaks, you know, right there in the middle of everything. And there's no place to go, no bed for them to lay in, no midwife handy, you know. This is how it happens, man. I mean, stuff just happens like that. Shepherds come in. I don't even know how that happened, you know, but see, that's kind of the point here. As Luke is showing you all the things that just happened around Jesus as being born, what you're meant to begin to understand is none of this just happened. None of this just happened. Jesus' life follows a divine purpose. It's a saving purpose. And if you understand this, you need to know that all of this includes you. Jesus' coming has everything to do with you, which means your life has a divine purpose too. And a lot of things that you think just happened, well, they didn't necessarily just happen. God is always guiding. God is always at work and in ways that we can understand, often in ways we'll never understand. But nothing in this world can thwart his purpose to save you, his purpose to bless you. God is going to get his work done. Jesus' life follows this amazing divine purpose. None of this just happens. There's a plan. There's a purpose unfolding since the beginning of everything. William Dix was not a hymn writer. He was not a preacher. He wasn't a poet. Guess what he was, y'all? He lived in mid-1800s. Guess what he was? Just guess. You'll never guess. Insurance salesman. William Dix was an insurance salesman. His father was a physician. William Dix was a disappointment to his father. Two different times in his 20s, William Dix had very long episodes of illness. And with the physical illness, he sunk into a really deep depression. William Dix became dangerously depressed as a young man in his 20s. But his depression, the desperation of depression led him to a deeper faith. He came back to Jesus, began to understand what Jesus had done for him and how Jesus could yet bless his life. And at that point, he started to write. And one of the things that he wrote is the poem that we now sing as the song, "What Child Is This?" William Dix wanted you to understand that there's no way to explain Jesus' birth laid out in the straw any more than it is easy to explain his death laid out on a cross. And he wanted you to make that connection. He wanted you to understand the purpose, the plan behind his coming. Now, the way we sing the song, the way it's printed in the Baptist hymnal, it makes it easier for us to sing, but we're losing a lot of what William Dix wrote. He didn't have the same chorus to be sung after every verse. Every single verse had its own chorus that answered the questions he'd been asking in the verses. And it's the second verse that has a chorus that is completely left out of anything we sing. And yet for William Dix, this was the heart of the song. This is the gospel. So it's the second stanza that begins, "Why lies he here in such mean estate where ox and ass are feeding." And then this is the chorus, the answer to the question. This is what he intended. "Nails, spears shall pierce him through, the cross he bore for me, for you. Hail, hail, the Word made flesh, the babe, the Son of Mary." You get it? It's the gospel. It's the gospel. William Dix wanted you to sing the song at Christmas and understand how it connects with the gospel. Who is this child laid in Mary's lap? This is Jesus. He's the Son of God. Why is he here in a stable in such humble circumstances? Because one of these days he's going to die in more severe circumstances, and all of this is for you. All of this is for you. It's the chorus, y'all, that's weird to most of us, though. It's that line, haste, haste to bring him laud. What in the world is that? What is laud? Not lard. I know it's Kentucky. Not lard. Laud. L-A-U-D. What is laud? And for that matter, what is haste? That's not a word we use. Haste. Haste. To bring him laud. It's one of the most important lines in the whole song. You have any idea what it means? What's haste? We'll start there. Haste is hurry. Yeah, I said, hey, haste. You know, that's what William Dix would have said in his day. Make haste. And he borrows the word from Luke's gospel. In the King James Version, it says the shepherds, they made haste to Bethlehem. That means they hurried. It means they got after it. In the 1970s, we would say they were booking it. You know what I mean? They were booking it. They left the place where they were. They went to the place where Jesus was, and they got there with haste. They're in a hurry. It was a big deal. It says they left their flocks, which is kind of a risky thing when you're the shepherds. But once you understand who Jesus is and what this means, meant nothing else matters anymore. Jesus becomes their highest priority. They leave everything, and that's the point of the story. They leave the place where they were, and they hurry to the place where joy is, the place where Jesus is. And that's what you have to do. That's what the Christmas story's about. They leave the place where they are, which is where their sheep, their responsibility, their whole life. But sometimes you just have to forget all of that and go find Jesus. Go find joy. And this is the point. Joy isn't always going to wait around for you till the next morning. Sometimes you got to grab it now like a drowning man would grab for oxygen. Do you understand what I'm saying? You can't just wait around till you solve all your problems. You can't wait around till they regulate your medication. You can't wait around till there's no more sickness or sorrow or crying to do. You got to go now to the place where joy is, the place where Jesus is. This is the message of the story. The shepherds made haste. They got after it. They went. They were booking it, y'all, because at that moment, the only thing they wanted to do is leave the place where they were and get to the place where Jesus is. Does that sound like something you would do? I'm being really serious. I mean, it's the time of year when some of us get all up in it. You know, got to keep Christ in Christmas. Walmart said happy holidays and it flew right up your nose. You want Christ in Christmas, but honestly, Jesus didn't just come to be Christ in your Christmas. He came to be Christ in your whole life. You leave the place where you are, your problems, your sorrow, your addiction, your sin, your troubles, your tears, and you go to the place where Jesus is. This is what you do. But can we just all say it? That's hard. It's simple, but it's hard. I grew up in a really, really small church. Y'all have no idea how small this church was. It was so little. We had like small groups at night before church. We called it training union. And in my training union class, when I was four, so it's like fours and fives, I think we called it primaries, there were two kids in this class, two kids in the whole class. It was me and Patty Murray. I was 5'4", she was 4'5". We were the same age. We're in this class together, two of us. And my grandmother was the teacher. Small church, y'all. My grandma was our teacher. Now, Patty called my grandma, which really bugged me because it wasn't her grandma. But you know how it is when you're a kid, like I was calling her grandma, so Patty probably just thought that was her name. So Patty's calling her grandma too. It really bugged me, but what do you do? So it was the Sunday before Christmas, and Patty Murray and I were both in class, and my grandma was our teacher. And my grandma just, it's a simple idea. She brought in a little Christmas tree. It was a real tree. She brought in a little live tree, and she had lights on it. It wasn't big, but we were little, so it seemed big. It was probably about that tall with lights. And it just appeared in our room that night. It hadn't been there all through, you know, like we didn't do Advent in our little church. It's just, oh, Christmas. So we came in that night, and there was that tree, and my grandma had got this box. It was just a box. And there was a doll already in the room because it was a kid's room, you know. So she got the doll that was always there and wrapped it in a blanket and put it in the box. And so grandma told me to stand up here by the box with the doll, and I was Joseph. And Patty got down on her knees there by the baby, and she was Mary. And we stood there. We turned out the lights. And just the light of that Christmas tree, I stood there, and I was Joseph, and Patty was Mary. I think that's the first moment of my life that I worshiped. It was real. Something about the beauty of that little tree, but more importantly, something about me feeling like I'm here with a job to do. I'm Joseph, you know, or I am here to take care of, I'm here to love this baby. I'm here to love Jesus. And I love Jesus. In that moment, as a four-year-old kid, I love Jesus so much. My heart was just full. I never wanted that moment to end. So at the end of things, I mean, that was before church, before like the church service. So we wrapped it up. Grandma turned the lights back on, and we're about to go out to church. And I just said, hey, Grandma, you know, could we come back and do this again? Could I be Joseph and Mary? We do that with the tree again? Grandma said, we'll see, you know. So then we went out to church, all right? So once we got out to church, I went to the back row with all the, you know, heathen kids in my church, you know, the older kids, because there weren't any other kids my age, so I'm on a pew with older kids. And they're cool kids, y'all. I mean, they're the older kids. They're the kids I wanted to fit in with, the kids I wanted to impress. And so I'm sitting back there like I'm one of them. And all of a sudden, the preacher up front, he says, anybody got a word of testimony tonight? Because that's what we did. And my grandma pops up. I'm not paying any attention to her because I'm all over all of that now. I'm with my guys. I'm with the kids on the back row. We're laughing. We're drawing pictures. We're popping our gum. We're putting our gum under the pew. I mean, you do what kids do in church. So my grandma stands up and starts talking. I'm not paying any attention to her until she starts crying. And then she just starts blubbering. And she says, I just want to thank God for my little class, Tim and Patty Murray, back there before church. And I'm thinking, oh, no, don't, Grandma, don't do this. Don't do this. And she's just boo-hooing. And we were back there, and we had a doll, and Tim and Patty had the doll, and Tim was Joseph, and he was playing Joseph and Mary with Patty. And at the end of the night, Tim said, Grandma, can we go back? And I want to be Joseph again. And I wanted to die. I wanted to croak. You know, she just told the whole church, and now all the kids on the back row are like, they're like, you want to play? You love playing dolls with Patty Murray. That's what they said. You love playing dolls with Patty Murray. You're going to marry Patty Murray. That's what they started saying. And I'm like, no, no, no. You know, I hated it. I hate all of it. You know, I was just trying to, you know, no, 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 Grandma, you know. Man, I was so humiliated. I mean, she told the whole church I wanted to go back there and play dolls with Patty. So when church was over, my grandma came to me and said, you know, Tim, you want to go back to the room and we'll turn the lights on the tree and you can be Joseph? I said, no. No, I don't want to. I told her no. I really wish I had not told her no. I'm just saying, as a child, it was really easy somehow to be that at home by the manger, you know, and to just let my heart fill up and not think about what other people would say about me. You know, those kids on that back row, they choked something important out of me that night. You know that? Do you understand that? that they choked something important out of me. And I'm just saying it now as a grown man, it's harder to just allow myself to be taken over by the beauty of the gospel and the presence of Jesus, and really, really simple moments when you just stop and let your heart flood with joy. There just aren't a lot of moments like that in your whole life. And so when you have an opportunity to leave the place where you are and go to the place where joy is, that's why you make haste. You just do it. You just do it because there are some moments that don't ever come back around to you. So William Dix writes this carol that's mostly questions, you know? What child is this? Why is he here like this? You know, that's the whole song. And then you sing back the answers to the questions. This is Christ the King, whom shepherds guard and angels sing. Haste to bring him, Lord. You said earlier that you love him. I don't know your heart. I just know that there's something in me and something probably in you that has sort of outgrown that ability to just love him like a child loves him, worship him the way a child would worship him. But it's not too late. It's Christmas Eve, but you still got time. You want to keep Christ in your Christmas, then this is what you do. You leave your mess, you leave your worries, you leave your problems, you leave all that would distract you from him, and you go to where Jesus is. You find him. You carve out a Bethlehem in your own heart, and you give him praise. There is no Christmas story in the Bible that doesn't end with people worshiping Jesus. So if you're going to have Christmas this year, the only way to do that is somehow or another, you got to put your place in the position of worshiping Jesus. Pray with me.